You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Parev Levon, and welcome to SBS Radio's Armenian program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be talking to you.
Levon, this is the first time you are on our radio program. A bit about yourself and your interests.
Well, I'm a photographer by trade, a fine art photographer, and I am also a commercial photographer, used to be. I'm semi-retired now. Started back in the 70s. It was an interesting process. Let me tell you a story about it. I was taking my degree in cellular physiology when I saw this girl that was in my chemistry class. I asked her to a movie at the student center. And we went there, and I didn't know what the movie was. And it turned out to be Clockwork Orange. And I don't know if you know the Stanley Kubrick film, but it's very violent. And it combines genre of violence and classical music. And there was something so amazing about it, because I grew up in a classical music household. And I was mesmerized by it. And so she said, listen, we got to go. I can't watch this. And I said, well, go ahead. I have to stay. And I realized that was the moment that I had an epiphany, and my interest just changed immediately from cells and microorganisms to art. And so it happens with the artists, I guess. Sometimes they suddenly hit them in the head with like a hammer. Mm-hmm. So I basically changed my background. I asked what the best school was, and I went to Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. And then I eventually ended up at the Art Center in Pasadena, which is a commercial school. I assisted people like Helmut Newton and over at Playboy. I assisted there for a while until about 1984. And I opened my own studio and started photographing for myself. I had music, video, a lot of music, customers, and album covers and movie posters. That was my specialty. So I worked for MGM, DreamWorks, Sony Records, Capitol Records. It just went on and on. I did a lot of work. And that was really a great time for me. I had my own studio, and I developed clientele. And eventually the computer started changing the landscape of the entire industry. Digital cameras came out, and I knew I was in trouble when my graphic designer called me up one day and said, I got this digital camera. Can you tell me how to operate it? The client wants me to photograph the movie poster. So at that point, I realized that things had changed, and the industry had changed. And I started looking to transform. This was around 2001 when that happened, and I just moved on. I started looking for other things, and my wife is a costume designer and a makeup artist over at Universal Studios. She was working there, and an inventor friend of mine came to me and said, hey, I need some photographs of my products. So I took some pictures of his products, and he inspired me. We were childhood friends, and he inspired me, and I started thinking about being an inventor. So my wife came up with an idea, and I followed up on it. And, so that schooling that I had in biochemistry came in handy. What she needed was makeup brush cleaner that was non-toxic. And so I invented that, and now it's sold all over the world. They gave it our name at the time. It was called Perry and Spirit, and it's in Sephora, and Lancome uses it, and we sell it all over the world. So as far as photography goes, starting in the 1980s, I was very interested in photographing survivors from the Armenian Genocide. And I started working with the Zorian Institute and photographing, doing stills. But they were more interested in documenting videos of the survivors. And I wanted to work with stills, so we didn't quite gel. I did some portraits. But then I eventually met up with a guy by the name of Ara Oshagan, and we teamed up, and he was just starting out in photography, and he wanted to take pictures of survivors, and he'd heard about me as a professional, So he wanted me to join up with him, and we were going to photograph all these survivors, and we put together an organization called the Genocide Awareness Project. And after that, it became known as Eyewitness. And to make a long story short, we basically put together an exhibit that was presented to a lot of the state houses, Capitol buildings, all around the United States. And basically, some of that information was trickled down and became part of the curriculum for the educational process of teaching students about the Armenian Genocide. We did interviews of the survivors as well as photographed them. Our last exhibit was basically titled Eyewitness. We've been showing that for some time, but we hooked up with an architect, Vahagn Tomasyan, and with the crew, the Eyewitness crew, we put together a project that was downtown in Grand Park in 2015 for the 100th anniversary. And these were portraits of survivors that were from 8 to 16 feet tall. And they were sculptures, in a sense. And they stayed up for about a month, and they were just wonderful. It was just amazing. And about 150,000 people apparently saw this exhibit. And tourists from all over the world came because it was right in the heart of the city. It was in front of City Hall as well as in what was called Grand Park. And that was by the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. And there's another theater there. And this was a great place for these structures that we put up. There were 24 structures altogether. In fact, we got an award for that. We were recognized by the Foreign Policy magazine as one of the 100 great thinkers of the year. So the three of us went and accepted an award for that in Washington, D.C. Then we also ended up going to Dubai sometime later and continuing on the idea of the Eyewitness Project. So I have been involved in genocide awareness projects for some time now as a photographer. So it's like the next step from that project. I really hadn't thought about my grandfather's story until my father picked up a magazine and he saw a picture of his father in the magazine. It was one of these AGBU publications, and it was on the back cover, and he saw it and he said, "That's my dad." And it was some French officers and a bunch of Arab-looking fellows with obviously my grandfather and maybe 100 people who looked like they just walked out of the desert. And then I was intrigued by that. And that suddenly became my motivation. And I asked my dad about the book. And he said his father had been trying to get this book published for years. And he wanted to publish it, but he never could do it. And he wanted me to do it. So then I took on the project. Let me go back one moment and say that my grandfather had dictated his memoirs to my grandmother, and she had written down in Armenian, in handwritten Armenian, these memoirs. And she made two copies. She gave one to my uncle Koko, Yotmakhbaryan, in Gaza, and she gave one to my father, Benyamin Yotmakhbaryan. And those two copies were the memoir. Well, we thought that my father's copy had been destroyed in a flood. So he had been sort of depressed about that. So when I saw this picture, I went to my aunt. My uncle Coco had passed away by then. And I asked my aunt about these pictures and, the memoir. And so she let me have that to make copies of it. And then we had photographs and documents that I also made copies of. And that was the book. And what's really amazing about it, and I went around to the entire family and asked them for photographs and information about my grandfather. I had actually only met my grandfather twice, once when I was 2.5 years old while we were coming from Beirut. We stopped in Gaza. My grandfather lived in Gaza. And then we came to the United States, And then when I was 9 years old, I went out with my parents to Gaza on our way to Lahore, Pakistan. That's another story. My father is an electrical engineer, and he designed electrical systems for entire countries. And he designed the electrical grid for Pakistan, Iran, and even here in Southern California. So I did meet him another time, which was, this was the second time, and they had me dress up as Santa Claus. That's how I remember it. I mean, as a nine-year-old, I remember that I dressed up as Santa Claus and scared my cousins and my sister because, I don't know, they just thought I was kind of crazy. But that's kind of how I remember my grandfather. And one thing he told me was, yes, Levon, tun Levon, which means I'm Levon and you're Levon. So I was named after him, you know, Levon Yot Machbarian. And when we became citizens of the United States, there wasn't enough room on the block type to write our full name, so my dad shortened it to Parian. Mm-hmm. Little did we know how much aggravation that would be to so many Armenians who really respect the name of Yot Machbarian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, originally, he was born in Urfa?
Yes, he was born in Urfa originally. And he went into the Ottoman cavalry. And he was there when the genocide started. And he was saved because he was trained as a tailor. So the officers kept passing him around and trying to give him odd jobs. And he found ways to work so that he wouldn't be killed. And also, it didn't hurt that they were in the Arab side. He was stationed at Damascus. So there were a lot of Arab officers as well, and not as many Turks. But they basically took all his Armenian fellow soldiers, and they all disappeared. And one day he escaped and went into the desert and found his way down to Aqaba, where he joined a group of other soldiers, and actually they joined up, and then they went to Aqaba. These were Armenian, you know, survivors from the genocide. After they got to Aqaba, they were asked to go back. He was asked to lead a group of men back into the desert to find survivors from the genocide. So he did. He took a group back into the desert and started collecting survivors. And that's really where what the story is about, where he brings all these survivors out of the desert. Excuse me. What's really amazing is that he was able to keep a lot of the documents that he had, and he met up with some really amazing people, like King Faisal. At that time, he was Amir. And Faisal gave him documents so that he could do things like stop military trains, and he was also given documents that would encourage survivors from the genocide to join his group. One of the interesting things was they would write the note to join his group on a piece of fabric, and then they could fold that fabric up and like a handkerchief and pass it from person to person because they didn't have any copy machines. So they would pass information like that, either word of mouth or through this system of fabric. So the book has a lot of documents in it. It's like it's a treasure trove for a scholar. When I first published the book, I had universities were the first people to start asking me for copies, University of Zurich and basically all over the world. They started asking for copies of this book because it had documentation of things that were, you know, it was like a puzzle, a part of the puzzle. That one of the things that was really important was he describes how he felt desperate and sent a letter to Saint Ali, who was at that time the king of Mecca, who was leading the Arab revolt against the Turks. And he sent a letter to him asking for assistance for the Armenians. And he sent two of his companions to deliver the letter. And actually, they hired somebody to deliver the letter. And they found out that he had joined up with the British at that point, and the road to Aqaba was open. And what they didn't know, the king said that he would do whatever he could to help them. But what they didn't know was that he had written a letter to his sons, Faisal and Abdullah, that they should protect and defend the Armenians in their lands like they were their own children. So this is why there are so many Armenians in these Arab cultures, and that's because of the King Hussein, Abdullah. It was Sharif bin Ali, who Hussein bin Ali was the leader, and he's the one that wrote it. It was a decree, basically, to his sons. And I could read a little bit of it. It's, you're requested to protect and to take good care of everyone from the Christian Armenian community living in your territories and frontiers and among your tribes, to help them in all their affairs and defend them as you would defend yourselves, your properties and children, and provide everything they might need, whether they are settled or moving from place to place, because they are the protected people of the Muslims. Armenians became survivors and had a place to go, because the Arabs were basically taking us in. And that was really an important issue. And that was one of the things that... Yeah, go ahead.
Levon, you said your grandfather dictated his memoirs to your grandmother. Did he do it in Western Armenian or Urfa dialect?
Well, you know, this is the thing. My mother translated from Armenian to English. I believe it was Western dialect. And recently I've actually had the English version translated into Western Armenian. And I'm hoping that we're going to be in Armenia September, October to show the movie and present the book.
Eastern Armenian.
Well, Eastern Armenian, is that okay? Did I say Western Armenian? I meant Eastern Armenian, yeah. So, you know, Hayastansi.
The film that it's going to be shown in Sydney, the film Crows of the Deserts, which is based on your grandfather's memoirs, how it happened? Did your family have had a desire to see the memoirs on screen? How it happened?
This is an interesting story, too. Actually, after publishing the book in 2012, I gave, you know, copies to my family, and one of them was my cousin, who was married to Gary Turpanjian. And Gary took the book and showed it to his father and his brother and his family. And they started buying them by the dozen. They wanted a dozen books because they wanted to hand them out to people. They felt this was like an amazing story, and it made a lot of sense to them. And one day they came to me and asked me if I wouldn't mind if they made it into a movie. So, you know, what was I supposed to say? Of course. Yeah, go ahead. So they turned it into a film. And, you know, originally they weren't, it wasn't going to be as a feature-length film. It was going to be a short, but it became a feature-length film. Now, I'll tell you the whole story here. So, obviously, Gary had something to do with it. And then his brother, Paul Turpanjian, and his father, Jerry Turpanjian, read the book and liked it, and they were very interested, apparently, and they wanted to make this into a movie. They thought the story was very good. So they hired a lady by the name of Marta Hauski, who is Norwegian, and she became Norwegian because, you know, after a while she became so entrenched in this that she basically became Armenian. But she is the director, producer, and wrote the material for the screenplay. So she had a great say in this and did a magnificent job putting it together. And she's been doing this for about 30 years. So she won an Emmy Award, and she has this great following of people. And she also has a crew of people that will work for her. And one of which was John Mazari, who is a composer who grew up with Armenian musicians in Hollywood area, I think. Anyway, he told me he grew up with Armenian musicians. And he grabbed this opportunity to make this music. And he knew so many people that he pulled in some of the really wonderful musicians, I mean, amazing musicians, and it turned it into a very, very powerful musical score for it as well. So, and so many people helped make this movie. But Martha was the really driving force of it in terms of doing a great deal of research. She was, just couldn't stop. My research was about 3 years. I took about 3 years to put everything together. And Martha put in about 4 years on top of mine. So she had my research to work with. And then she added another 4 years of research. And what's really amazing about the film is the archival footage that she found in so many archives all over the world. They searched every archive they could find to come up with material that was from this period. And they use it to tell the story. And that's what makes it such an amazing film. You actually feel like you're there because you are. Mm-hmm. This is, you're in the era. So that's part of what makes it great. And there were so many other people that helped in the research, like Bennett Terpanchin and Paul. And, of course, you know, we had actors that were participating. It just goes on. The list goes on and on of all the people that participated in this. And including my family, all the Yotnachparians and all their branches of Yotnachparians who also participated one way or another to make this a successful story. And I tried my best. So my mother translated the book into Armenian, and I took it and wrote it in a way that would make it interesting, because it was pretty much just like, we went here, we did this, we did that, we did this, we did that. So I worked on it to make it a story, but not by changing anything. It stayed his words very much. If he was here, he would be saying these words. And that's how I worked with it. So it really is very much a historical document, as far as I'm concerned.
So, Levon, next week you will travel to Sydney for the screening of the film. Is this your first trip to Australia?
Yes. I can't wait to shake hands with a kangaroo.
You won't see on the streets. Was the film screened in other film festivals?
Oh, yeah. We've screened it in over 20 film festivals, and it's won awards in almost, I'd say, half to three-quarters of those. There's one. It's been either recognized or won an award of some type. It's really been recognized as a very powerful film.
Why the title, Rose of the Desert? Is there any special meaning?
Yeah. Well, okay, so I was looking for a title. We had this expeditionary, the original title my grandfather put on the memoir was Expeditionary Force or Expeditionary Group. And somehow it sounded like some kind of a group that went out and explored, as opposed to a group that went out to recover. So I thought maybe the title wasn't very enticing the way he had it. And that was the only thing I really changed. But I know it was a working title for him. So as I was reading the book, there's a part that's not in the film. And as they're walking through the desert and they're lost, they come over this, he comes over this hill and he looks out over the hill and he sees thousands and thousands of dead blackbirds, crows, and they've died of thirst. And so he thought this was going to be their end as well, because they were in the middle of the Syrian desert and there was no water. So that's what gave me the idea for the title. At first I said, well, we call it Dead Crows of the Desert. And then my wife, who did a lot of work on this book as well, in terms of helping me and making maps and that sort of stuff, she said, that sounds pretty negative. You should do something a little more positive than that. Because it really is a positive story. I mean, so this, I took out dead and made it just Crows of the Desert.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a very positive story in terms of, my grandfather doesn't talk about killing people or anything. There's not much of that on there. But what he does talk about is going and saving a nation. And I think that's really an important thing to remember. My grandfather wasn't the only person that did this work, by the way. I mean, there were other people who did it. But what he did was he documented it. And he has photographs. And he has documents that allow him to stop trains from military trains. And they're in English and they're in Arabic. And many of them, because different areas, different parts of the train, the line authorities. So he had to have the different papers for every part of the line that they were bringing in people. He also found orphans. Later on, he talks about going, once they established, the British move up with the Arabs up into Damascus, and they capture Damascus. He starts to settle down, then he's asked to go back into the villages and find orphan survivors and bring them back. So he brought back a lot of survivors like that, including his own brother. He found his brother. I wish he was more of a writer. I read T.E. Lawrence's diary, and it goes in such detail. He talks about what people were wearing that day. You know, this guy came in a certain outfit and dressed in this, and he had this and that. My grandfather, but he wasn't a writer, so he wasn't, you know, he just kind of gave us the basic information of what was going on. So it wasn't great details of, you know, each person's identity and all this sort of thing. Like, if you read T.E. Lawrence's work, he talks in great detail about everyone.
So, any other subject you want to talk about before we finish?
Well,
we covered a lot.
Yeah, we covered a lot, you know, and I want to leave a little bit of something for people to come to the film for. So, you know, we've been showing this film, and everywhere we show it, it fills up. We've had, for example, the last place we showed it was at the Alex Theater in Glendale. That takes, I think, 1,500 people, and it was sold out. People, when they find out about this movie and that it's showing, they want to see it. Because even for Armenians who know the stories and know about the genocide, it reveals some things that you may not have known. And I think it's very, very interesting. And also, it does have some gruesome moments, you know, it does talk about the genocide, but it also has a very positive message, which is that there were people who went out to rebuild the nation. And I think we're in a point now where that's happening again. We have things happening in Syria where Armenians are being driven out of Syria historically. And they're going to Armenia, a lot of them. And I think they're, in a sense, coming home.
Okay, Levon, thank you for the interview. It was nice talking to you about your grandfather.
Thank you so much. And I can't wait to meet everybody over there in Sydney. Yeah, and I want to thank everyone in Sydney that's bringing me out there to talk about the film, especially Margaret. She's a wonderful person, I can tell. I'm sure that there are so many people, and film festivals attract wonderful people, I think. So if you want to meet some wonderful people, come on out to this film festival and see the movies. The people work really hard to be able to put them on for you. And, you know, the way you can show them your appreciation is by buying tickets and coming out to see the movies. Thank you.
Want to hear more stories like this? Subscribe to our regular podcasts on iTunes.